5 years ago, I went to a lecture at the Gavot Science and Space Center in Oakland. I actually paid to go to this event, which was a little like, you know, getting on one of those rides at the amusement park, and then about 2 minutes or 2 seconds into the ride going, oh my God, what have I done? It was not only scary, but the slides were being shown in a planetarium. So, you know, they were like three or four times life size. And one of the first slides was a bell curve. And in the middle of the bell curve was biblical, and at the far end was game over. Now, the man doing the presentation was a venture capitalist, a person who helped create the Bill Nye the Science Guy exhibit for children and youth at the Chabot. So I walked out of that lecture feeling maybe this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, you know, he's not a scientist and he's probably exaggerating. But I made the mistake of reading the authors that he recommended, people like Bill McKibben, who helped create 350.org, and James Hansen, a NASA scientist who's been warning us since the 1980s about what was likely to happen. And that made life very difficult. And I have sort of a context for this, which is, I went to the other Star King. I do have props today, notice please. When we started there, our first week, we were taught that we were supposed to be a pastor, a prophet, a preacher, a scholar, a counselor, a theologian, a teacher, and an artist. Let me do that one. Thank you, ma'am. Let me do that one more time. Pastor, prophet, preacher, scholar, counselor, theologian, teacher, and artist. I was terrified. But during that first week of orientation, a bunch of the other students piled into my car and we all went looking for something to eat. And in the car ride, one of the people in the car said, I said something about being concerned, I think, and he said, oh, well, you know, the only one that really bothers me is prophet. And I said, you know, actually, that one's not too difficult. Nobody expects you to be Nostradamus. Nobody expects you to predict what's going to happen 500 years in the future. What a prophet really does is tells the truth. He tells or she tells the truth about what's happening right now and what's likely to going to happen next. And I can tell you from personal experience, if you do that on a regular basis and your batting average is even a little above 500, you end up being made head of planning. Well, I didn't lie, but let's say, like Humphrey Bogart, who went to Casablanca for the waters, I was seriously misinformed. It's one thing to tell people that if they adopt this program rather than that program when you're working for the government, you're likely to get some resistance. Or when you tell them that there's a need for change, you're going to get resistance. I'd experienced that. And I'd also had a lot of experience in overcoming that resistance. But I really didn't recognize the magnitude of the resistance and the challenges that were involved in learning what is really going on today with the environment, politically, economically, culturally, so many different ways. And, you know, your theme was, or is, I'm going to learn. Well, I learned, and, I can't always recommend it. I ended up with a really much darker picture of the world than I started out with. And there's a very famous UU minister who learned everything he needed to know in kindergarten. Well, I didn't pay attention in kindergarten. In fact, I didn't pay attention in first grade. And one of the reasons I'm probably a UU today is because when the first grade teacher of Sunday school complained to the director of religious education about my bad behavior, this woman, who in my mind was a genius and one of my greatest mentors, said, "If I promote you to second grade, will you behave?" It worked. I still have a friend many, many years later from that time. I still have friends, people I know from that time. All of them happen to be just a year older than I am. But what I did need to learn, I learned from TV commercials. You know, I didn't really pay a lot of attention in school, but I really paid a lot of attention to the TV. And the first thing I learned from the Maytag repairman. Now, you know, when I found out how serious the situation was, and I also learned about the momentum of the situation, as in the longer we may wait, the more difficult it will be to save the planet or save ourselves from extinction, I was running around like Chicken Little. And I was, for a while, the least popular guy in town. I was offering a service nobody really wanted. And not only were they not coming to me, they would sort of try to leave the room, even my fellow ministers, when I came in because, you know, Earl's going to talk about climate again, and we just don't want to hear it. The second commercial I learned a lot from was Siobhan Margarin. And its motto was, "It's not nice to fool Mother Nature." So, you know, Mother Nature is offered some of the margarine. She thinks it's butter. When she finds out it isn't, it goes from all these nice little deer and friendly things to a big storm arriving. Well, I would go even further. It's not possible to fool Mother Nature. My third lesson came from Fram oil filters. And their motto was, as somebody held up an oil filter, "Pay me now or pay me later." The idea is if you regularly replaced your oil filter, your car would run pretty well. But if you didn't, you might need a whole new engine. And God knows an oil filter is a lot less expensive than having to replace your engine. Well, the one bit of confidence that I did come into this situation was because, you know, before I was made head of planning, frequently my predictions were not well appreciated. People are not popular when they tell the emperor, even the emperor is a supervisor or a manager or an executive, that they have no clothes. And so, but I'd also learned that, you know, if you tell the truth often enough, and especially if you become more sophisticated in how you do it, and your truth comes to pass, then you're seen in a different way. So when I first started this 5 years ago, and this is part of my own panic, my message was not well received. That's no longer true. I sometimes say my best friend is Sister Sandy, you know, the hurricane, because people really have been paying attention since Sandy. And sometimes when I do worship services, I use musical tunes like Singing in the Rain, because I want to give people a sense that it's raining and that we can still have a sense of joy. And yet, I didn't predict the drought. So that song probably doesn't have quite the same meaning as it once had. I think most of us would be singing in the rain were it nice enough to rain. But I also learned another critical lesson. And this lesson is one that's been repeated through the ages. The earliest version of it is in Proverbs. "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him." Now, Mark Twain modernized that a bit and said, never argue with a fool. Onlookers may not be able to tell the difference. But my all-time favorite was written by Greg King. Don't argue with idiots, because they will drag you down to their level and then beat you up with their experience. So part of what I've learned in this experience is that if you're in the process of telling the truth, there is going to be a shift in consciousness as that truth comes into being. And so now when I talk to people about climate change, their reaction is either bless you or how can I help? And it's how can I help that's part of the process. And I want you to show you two extremes, more props here. One is this napkin, which I'm sure you cannot read from there. On one side it says, made with 100% recyclable material. The other time it says, save the environment one napkin at a time. Now, entirely too many people are trying to save the environment one napkin at a time. One of my friends, Fred Small, the UU minister in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who's been at this much, much longer than I have, when we went on a tour of the some of the environmental sites in Louisville, Kentucky, where the General Assembly was last year, at the end of the tour, Fred was furious. He said, you know, all I learned about was how to put solar on the roof and, you know, how to, you know, do some other things like that. But that's not enough. We must do more. And I said, well, Fred, you're not in Cambridge anymore. Out here, when the EPA people go out into the hills, they get shot at. You know, this is Kentucky. They have a long ways to go. But I also said, Fred, and I know Fred to be an excellent writer, I said, Fred, why don't you just write something up about this? And I loved what he came up with. It was really simple. Changing your light bulbs is good. Changing your senator is better. And so part of what he was teaching all of us was that there is more to be done than can be done by this sense of personal virtue about, you know, buying a Prius or taking public transit or putting solar on your roof. Now, I want to give you the other extreme. You know, if I've got the napkin on this side, this is the other extreme. I went to the showing of the film Bitter 70, which is the story of Tim DeChristopher, a UU who is now a student at Harvard Divinity. But at the time, he was young. I think he was out of college, but he was a member of the Salt Lake City UU congregation. And he went to a bidding for oil leases that he thought was illegal. And somebody handed him a bidder card that he could come up with, and it was number 70. And as the auction started, he turned around and he looked and he saw a woman in his congregation, and she was crying. And he impulsively made the decision to start bidding. And he won every auction. All the different parcels of land on which they wanted to extract from this National Wildlife Center, National Forest. Sorry, none of the above. National Park. And when they found out that he didn't have any money, they arrested him. And he was given several opportunities to cut a plea, to make a bargain so he wouldn't have to go to prison. And he refused all of them. And he spent 2 years in prison. Now, I've talked to Tim about this, and it's a very interesting conversation because Tim says, despite all this I've done, I'm really very much of an introvert. And since he went to a prison where, you know, he wasn't physically a danger all the time, he said, I never have gotten so much reading done in my entire life. Except for the 2 weeks when, or 2 or 3 weeks when he pissed off Orrin Hatch about something and he was put in solitary. He said it was, or all his reading material was taken away or something like that. He said, yeah, it wasn't that bad for me. So, despite this thing that says, I am bitter 70, and despite the napkin, I am neither one. At this stage of my life, I do not plan to spend 2 years in prison. In fact, what I've had to do is look deeply within myself to figure out how I can make a difference. Now, I spent 30 years doing organizational development and strategic planning and a bunch of other things before I came into the ministry. So these days, I'm working in Oakland, I'm working in Richmond, and I'm helping people in set up models for the United States. Because even though I worked for the federal government and lived in or near Washington almost my entire life, the government is broken in a way that I have never experienced before at the federal level. And innovation these days seems to be coming at the city level or the state level or here in the 9-county Bay Area. And there are lots of really dedicated people who are willing to face a frightening future. And you know the fun part about that is how much joy you get working with them. Because my experience is being surrounded by passionate, courageous, dedicated people is about as good as it gets. And one of my favorite teaching stories is an old Jewish story. And the story says that there was a wise old rabbi named Zussel who had many students and was much beloved. And as he was on his deathbed, Zussel was asked, are you concerned about the life hereafter? And Zussel said, no. When I go to the life hereafter, I will not be asked whether I was Moses. I will be asked whether I was Zussel. Now is the time for each of us to find out who Zussel is within us, how we actually live our faith in very challenging, turbulent times. But I have faith that you can do it. And it isn't done by comparison. It isn't done by trying to pretend you're Tim DeChristopher, and if you're not, you've somehow failed. It isn't done by trying to pretend to be me or Roy or Stuart or anyone else here. It's done by finding what is the call within yourself and how do you make a contribution. And I think if you're paying attention at all, if you're going to learn, you'll learn that it's more than napkins and light bulbs. You'll learn that we have to reclaim people power. And just for that reason, I'm having more fun than I've ever had since the 1960s. This is really a time where we are in a process of revolution, and if we do not revolt, then we'll be listening to the voices of our great-great-grandchildren asking, where were you? What did you do? Blessings upon you all.